hearing is number 22-13-14, Jackson versus McDonough. Okay, Mr. Brown.
May it please the Court, Your Honor. I'm going to begin with an apology to the Court. And when I was preparing for oral arguments, I found that what was written in my reply brief in a footnote on page 2 is not correct. So I'm starting by using my time to point out my mistake. And in my reply brief, I essentially was citing the Federal Circuit's case of Diamond versus Principi, and I said that the word substantial doesn't appear in the case, and I don't understand why the computer check didn't find it, but when I was preparing for the case to do my arguments today, I saw that the word does appear 2 times. So I just wanted to point that out, and I thought I had an ethical obligation to do so.
Okay, thank you, but let's get to the part of the matter here.
Yes, sir.
I know you've been arguing about the standard that was applied here, but what in fact was wrong with the compliance with the remand order? In other words, in what respects was the remand order not complied with?
In this case, Mr. Jackson was remanded by the Board of Veterans Appeals to have a mental health examination so that an opinion could be made as to his sanity at the time of the misconduct which led to his removal from the service. And if we look at...
Well, they did that on the remand, didn't they?
Your Honor, my argument would be, and I know we're arguing about facts here, but my argument would be in this case that it was inadequate. And that was the argument that was made to the board
okay,
in my letter.
I understand, but why was it inadequate? I understand we're not here to decide facts, but I think we need to, as a background principle, we have to see whether it would make any difference what the standard was if
yes, sir.
In fact there was strict compliance with the remand order.
So the actual report starts at page 478 of the appendix. And in the report, the doctor, who was a contractor, she provided what's called a disability benefits questionnaire, which is a standard form issued by the Veterans Administration to practitioners. And she provided a mental health opinion and the disability benefits questionnaire. And there's essentially in the law, a medical opinion is to be given no credibility if it's based on an inaccurate factual premise. And this doctor said that there was never a mental health diagnosis on this veteran. And the fact that the doctor would say that there was never a mental health diagnosis flies in the face of all the treatment that he's been receiving from the VA for like 20 years of treatment.
But where in here is the statement there was no mental health diagnosis?
It's at the top of 479, isn't it? And it says there is not a current medical diagnosis.
Let me flip to that, Your Honor. Okay. So it looks like it's page 481 is the start of the disability benefits questionnaire. And on 482, under section 2A, does the veteran have more than one mental health disorder? No. Does the veteran have a diagnosed brain injury? No. No mental, under section 3, no mental disorder diagnosis.
So those are in the present tense, right? Does that make a difference or make no difference to your point?
Well, and that was my argument in my brief to the Veterans Court, was that this doctor focused only on the present. And basically within the written portion of the doctor's exam, the doctor says, well, he was treated for his PTSD, and it's now in remission. And so...
I'm not seeing this as a failure to comply with the remand order. It may be an argument that the evidence doesn't support the government's position, but that's a different issue. I mean, the remand order asks that the RO or whatever it is that the examiner addressed this question. The examiner addressed the question, but you're not, it seems to me, arguing that the examiner failed to address the question, but that he or she got the wrong result.
Your Honor, my argument to the Veterans Court was that this was an inadequate examination, and it should be remanded for an adequate examination.
And you lost that, and that's application of a lot of fact or factual that we can't review, which is why you're not making it here, right?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's why
You're trying to make an argument that the remand wasn't substantially complied with, but there's two questions the board told them to answer, and this examination answers those two questions, right?
Your Honor, that's what Judge Allen said when he I think he used the word precisely was his words, and I think that that's what the government's brief also.
Well, are you saying that this document doesn't answer those two questions? I know you disagree with the answer, but it answers them, does it not?
It answers those questions, Your Honor, but I think that the focus...
So they complied. The board sent it back, said, get a medical examination, have the doctor answer these two questions. The doctor answered those two questions. Whatever standard, substantial, complete, you know, whatever word Judge Allen used, they complied. What are we here about? How is your argument for a higher standard going to change this case? Because your argument is not really with the compliance. Your argument is with the sufficiency of this examination and whether it supports the outcome. But that's a question for the Veterans Court, isn't it?
When I did my assessment of this case and I looked, I don't know that at this...
Sorry, I asked a bunch of questions in that speech. Can you answer what I started with was... Why isn't this compliance under any standard? There were two questions that the doctor was asked to order, and as I read it, the doctor answered both of those questions. Do you think the doctor didn't answer those questions?
I think the doctor relied on an inaccurate factual premise.
That's not answering my question. There was two specific questions. Did the doctor answer those questions?
The doctor,
not whether you think the answers were correct or not. Did the doctor answer those specific questions?
Yes.
How is that not compliance?
There's no direction from this court in precedent that says what the standard is.
I get it. Look, you know, you have an argument that it has to be more than substantial compliance. That may be a legal argument. How does it matter in this case? You just agreed that the doctor complied with the remand. You don't like the doctor's opinion. You don't think it's adequate. You don't think it's based on the correct information. But that doesn't go to compliance. That goes to the weight and whether it's a reliable opinion. But if the doctor complied and answered the two specific questions, isn't that compliance under any standard?
Your Honor, the doctor was tasked with deciding whether he was sane at the time of his misconduct. Doctor didn't focus on that.
Well, are you sure? Because at 479 at the top of the page, it says, under VA regulations, veteran was not insane at the time he committed the acts that led to his discharge. Isn't that precisely what you just said he didn't respond to?
Well, I just read that paragraph. What it says is the veteran does not have a current mental disorder diagnosis that meets DSM criteria. So if we read
that's the first sentence, but the second sentence is different. veteran was not insane at the time he committed the acts that led to his discharge. It's answering two different questions. Maybe he should put it in two different paragraphs. But this is, he's not insane now, and he wasn't insane then.
But if we read that together with the paragraph where they talk about the fact that he was in treatment for years and then was put into remission, I think that the doctor is missing the point. And the point here is that this man had PTSD and he was in treatment and continues to be in treatment. And this doctor focused on the present and then said, because he's sane in the present, he was sane in the past. And that's an inaccurate factual premise. And in this case, this doctor should be considered inadequate. So when
let me ask you this. That sentence I just pointed to you to, the second sentence, if we read that sentence as the doctor saying he was not insane at the time he committed the acts that led to his discharge, as an assessment of his sanity in the past, does that comply with the remand order?
Yes.
Okay.
So in order to preserve this veteran's case, I did research and I saw that all of the precedent that talks about what is and is not considered compliance with Stigall, which of course Stigall is a veterans court case.
I get what you're saying. I mean, you possibly come up with a legal issue within our jurisdiction, but if it doesn't matter to the facts of this case, it doesn't matter.
We don't get to appeal the facts, and that's because Congress said so. And we don't agree with the outcome of the case. So we look to the only thing that allows us to continue with our appeal. And of course, the fact is there is no precedent at this level. And it looks to me like there's an erosion within the Veterans Court from Stigall going forward. So Stigall says the veteran should expect a right, and that right produces a duty. And so that's the height and the most...
Can I just ask you one more question? Even if we agree that there's a higher standard here, if we determine that standard was met, isn't it harmless error? I mean, on the plain face of that document, if we determine it complied not just at some substantial level, but it complied totally, whatever word you're using, why would the legal determination have any bearing on the outcome in this case?
In this case, the exam and the report itself are not adequate. And that's the argument.
You're not answering my question. Hypothetically, let's assume that this exam meets the highest level of compliance. That's not mere substantial compliance, but it's complete and total compliance, which is what I think the legal standard you're arguing for is in some other words. If that is true, hypothetically, then making that legal determination has no bearing on the outcome of this case. You lose under the lower standard, you lose under the higher standard.
But we get to make the argument, Your Honor, because the facts on remand get to go back before the judge. And it allows us to better argue these facts to this judge. And in this case, right now, he's out. If we get a remand and we get a doctor's opinion that doesn't have the conflict, and in this case, there's conflict with what's written in the report.
You can always go get a new doctor's opinion and file a motion to reopen for new and material evidence.
Yes, Your Honor. The Appeals Modernization Act gives us a lot of opportunities for this veteran. But right now, we're staying the course with our appeal at this level to work forward with our appeal so that we don't waive any of our arguments and we make every argument we can so that we can best represent this veteran who we're trying to get benefits for. Because right now, the only benefits he gets is treatment. And he went to Vietnam. And he got in trouble in Vietnam a little bit, minor stuff, being late for work or not showing up, things like that. Where he really got in trouble was when he got to Fort Bliss, Texas, after he'd been in Vietnam. And that's when the real trouble began. So I'm just trying to help this man.
I'm sure you are. Thank you. We'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Kramer.
May it please the court. I think it's absolutely right that the standard doesn't matter here. That
so can you help me then? What kind of judgment are you asking for then? Is it we don't have jurisdiction? Because that standard question does seem like a legal interpretation that we have jurisdiction over, assuming it was properly raised and not forfeited and the like. So we would have jurisdiction, but then do we have jurisdiction to determine it was harmless error? Where if we decided that the higher standard had to be met, I'm not saying that we would, but if we did, wouldn't we have to remand it to the Veterans Court to determine whether the higher standard was met? Or do you read the record and the Veterans Court judge statement, which talks about, I forget what term he uses, as saying, you know, this does meet the higher standard?
I do read the Veterans Court decision to say that it precisely is the term that was used, complied with the remand. So.
And you think that that's the higher standard as opposed, because precisely could mean technically, but, you know, there's actually that in a hyper-technical way because it answered the question as opposed to, it seems to me there are several different notions going on here. One is precisely meaning there was actually an answer to these questions. Substantially could mean, well, not quite, but close enough. But there's yet a different thing playing around in the area, which is, does the requirement of compliance include an adequacy of analysis component? And I don't know, but I would, I guess, ask you whether the two paragraphs on 477 might support that. The rationale for all opinions expressed must be provided if the examiner is unable to offer any of the requested opinions. Clinician must offer a rationale, and then not the clinician, but the RO has to review the opinion and address any inadequacies.
Well, I would say that the opinion here was adequate. It answered the question.
But the accusation is that it was not, right? The allegation is it rested on false premises leading to a, an inadequate, I'm not quite sure what that word means, but an inadequate answer to the questions. The questions were about, right, insanity at the time of the discharge or conduct leading to the discharge under the relevant statute and regulations.
I'm sorry, can you rephrase the question?
There is a sense in which the word precisely could mean these questions ask whether the examiner, whether you think this person was insane at the relevant time. And if the answer is, suppose the examiner said, no, full stop, nothing more to say, not saying what I have looked at, just no, I don't think so. Do you think that might be, in fact, a precise compliance with the remand order, depending on how you interpret the remand order, because it's a precise answer to the question? And one way of formulating the legal contention that is presented to us by Mr. Jackson is that something more substantively adequate in the basis for the answer is actually required to comply with a remand order.
I think the board asked very specific questions, and those questions were answered. And I would say that this opinion does go into more depth than simply answering the questions. It goes over his medical history, his history of alcohol use, et cetera. So it wasn't just a statement all by itself saying, no, he wasn't insane.
Right, but if all we get to decide is what the legal standard is, then the question whether that legal standard is met by this action on remand, the medical opinion, would not be for us. That would be for a remand after we said what the legal standard is, unless we can conclude it is absolutely clear on the face of this opinion that any legal standard that we can think of would be met by this.
I would agree that any legal
absolutely
standard
clear
you can think of, it would be absolutely clear on the face. The two questions were answered. The examiner went through his medical history in the opinion. I think under any standard, strict or substantial compliance, it would be met. If the court has no further questions, I'll sit down.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Brown, you have a minute here.
In Stegall at page 271, that's right now essentially the rule that says where the veteran has a right to expect compliance and the secretary bears the burden to ensure that it's done correctly. However, there is a paragraph there on that same page that does take account that there is a requirement of prejudicial error. So I concede that prejudicial error is part of Stegall. I see that in the writing. So it is my burden then to show prejudicial error to be able to keep the Stegall rights for my client and burden on the secretary. And I understand that. So I just ask that if the facts are determinative in the decision for my case today, that the court look at essentially the remand instructions that begin on page 474 and end on page 477 versus what is here in the report from the contract doctor that begins at 478. So if prejudicial error is something that has to be considered, I think that's where the facts are. They are what they are. I can't change the facts. However, in this case, we're trying to get benefits for a person who served in the Army in Vietnam, who came back, got into a lot of trouble, and was sent home. And it's all in the record. He gets Social Security, but he doesn't get veterans benefits other than treatment. And that's what we're trying to do here. So I just ask you, please focus on those things. I think that's really all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Thank you, Ms. Brammer. The case is submitted. That concludes our session for this morning.